Hello, dear Get More podcast listeners. Today we are lucky to have with us Mr. Robert Brown. So, Robert, tell us, who are you?
Well, I'm Robert Brown. I work for a company in the United States called Viasat. It's a satellite company and so much more than that. Sort of a multi-country, conglomerate telecom company, and I came in through an acquisition in 2014 through a smaller company called Net Near You. So more about me, though. So I basically oversee business development for one of the divisions here at Viasat, and I have been in the telecom space since the early 90s, if you will.
Okay.
And when we were more talking about fiber in the ground as opposed to objects in space. And that we didn't have phones back then. We had wired phones. So as far as I'm concerned, the internet sort of grew up with my career, and I became a part of it, right? It's not what I had aspired to do in my early teens, in my early 20s. I was a musician, as you can probably see. There's a guitar over here in the corner of my office here. That's what I like to do in the spare time, and I enjoy doing so. So I think that's, if you're looking for, I'm married, I have a 22-year-old daughter who's graduated from, college, and now I'm just trying to figure out what I want to do with the rest of my life, I guess is how you look at it, right?
Well, that's quite an interesting challenge, but right. Let me ask you, does one start with music and end up in satellite telecommunication?
You know, I don't think it's on purpose. I think when you're young and you're having fun and you have more disposable income, if you will, or you don't have as many debts and expenses and things like that, or family and house and all that, you can go do gigs and I was a disc jockey at one time, so basically I've done all sorts of fun musical things. I enjoyed it. At some point, I started wanting to make some money, and when you're a starving artist, as they say, you do it on the side, and if the main job starts to make more money, that's when you start spending more time with it, less time doing gigs and things like that. So, I've always wished I'd spent more time in music, but at this point, had a very luxurious career in telecom, so to speak. So,
what made you get to telecom?
Well, I was in my early 20s, and there was a company that I had worked for part-time, and they were putting these dialers on the outsides of vacation homes, and I thought, what in the world is that, right? So I thought, hey, I get to travel all over the place and get to go to the beaches and so forth. Well, what they were doing was they were putting I guess you would call it these dialers that would sort of circumvent calls that were going out, so that it would basically do an operator assisted call. Okay. So back in the day, you could manage and operate all of those vacation homes or condominiums and so forth with a managed telecom service. The property itself or the property management company would get a cut of the revenue that you would have that, and essentially, we're basically taking over the long distance charges, right? So you wouldn't have rampant use of long distance. When long distance was kind of a thing and expensive back then, right? Could be dollars per minute kind of thing to the user. So homeowners wanted to protect that, yet make it available to their guests, right? So that was what I started at. It was fun while it lasted, but went from there and then went to Dell. So not necessarily telecom, but went to Dell when they were actually making computers and was in their sales department, inbound sales. And so that's sort of how I got my chops on sales. And from that point, I went to a company called IXE, which became Broadwing, which became Level 3, which became Lumen. So if you're following the telecom space, they are a big fiber company and big telecom company, and that is essentially what I've been doing since the mid 90s. Has been in the telecom space, selling transport or putting together business models or go to market strategies or product development, et cetera, in the telecom space. Now it's cloud-based services, it's AI, it's whatever you call it, right? But it is what it is. It's still still data moving from one place to another.
Right.
So you look at it, yeah.
So as you've been in sales, and would you say you love that it was a call, or did you
I love sales.
Okay.
I'm definitely a type A.
Okay. So. Okay. and would you say, because I'm close to Grant Cardone, being one of his 10x business coaches, and Grant always says that you are not born a salesperson, you become a salesperson. Would you agree with that?
I think you are, I think it's a part of your DNA. You have to have the kind of personality or grow into the personality to be able to be an extrovert and be able to kind of get into your discomfort zone convince people to buy the things that they think they don't, the things that they need, they just don't know they need, so to speak, right? So that's kind of how I look at it.
Okay, very nice. So what were your biggest successes and your biggest scary moments in your career?
Biggest successes and biggest scariest moments, okay. I would say the biggest successes are in the tech boom in the early 2000s, when companies were expanding like crazy and spending lots of money like crazy, before the bust, which I would call the real estate bust, which sort of became the telecom bust, there was massive contracts being done. So one of the things that we did, a few of us left Broadwing at the time, which was this large fiber optic carrier that was coast to coast. So we went to an energy company.
Okay.
An energy company that was trading, that's used to trading trading oil and gas and so forth, right? And they wanted to be novel in their approach and trade bandwidth, okay, before this was a thing, before they could arbitrage or kind of put a marketplace for bandwidth. They wanted to have a trading floor for bandwidth. So they would build all this infrastructure across the US and into these data centers, as they called them at the time, and then allow enterprises or small businesses, whoever needed to connect to it, to buy just what they needed at the time, right?
Okay.
Now, we could sell that as a premium. And had it not been for an implosion of a certain energy company called Enron, that basically killed the energy market. This was a burgeoning business that we thought was going to really take off. It was early on. You know, if you think about where we are today with cloud services and you're buying storage in a sort of a virtualized storage, think about it before then when it was, hey, I actually have physical layer transport going to these data centers and I just need a I need a little last mile connection to it or something in a cage or whatever at a data center to get connectivity as an enterprise. And I only need this much for this amount of time or this much average, kind of like almost your utility bill. I spend more on the weekends than I do during the week. You know, that's essentially how we were going to trade bandwidth. And it was a good business. I think it would have been very good. And I even though it was a failed business because of the energy market sector, I was proud to have been a part of the business plan and what could have been, and sort of the early frontier for that.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that was on the on
okay.
The
so the scariest moment. Let me think. Scariest moment is probably losing your job, right?
Right.
And I have a good lesson there, right? So I think it was a time when they were doing layoffs and so forth with different companies, and I was just affected by it. And it humbles you because you start to realize, okay, I'm not having a moment here. I'm not having a midlife crisis. I'm not completely on the streets, so to speak, but it is a humbling experience in your career to say, well, how did I get to this place where I was laid off? And for me, it was, it didn't take me long to find another job. It just, The initial moments for that were concerning,
Mm-hmm.
Because you sort of panic about it. But I would say that what it did is opened up, you know, I hate to use the cliche, opens up more doors, but it did, right? So what happened is, because I had built such a large network, professional network of followers on LinkedIn and other social media,
okay.
because I knew so many people, I essentially reached out and said, look, I'm immediately open for consulting, right? So within a day or two, I had like three or four consulting agreements. I was making as much or more than I was before. It gave me an opportunity to make a choice where I wanted
mm-hmm.
to go next.
Okay.
I got recruited to Google after that. So it was like it went from one kind of interesting company to something much more fascinating for me. And it was great, right? I would say to anybody that's that has experienced it or will experience it or may experience it, that it is not the worst thing in the world. You have to think back and just exhale for a minute and go, okay, someone has forced me to make a decision at this point,
right.
as opposed to me sitting in a job mm-hmm. that I may not like. They forced me to make a decision, and now I can make my own decision. I can sort of forge my own road ahead. And that was the worst situation. That was 12 years ago
mm-hmm.
Or so, but it was, you know, it puts you feel like you're at a low point in your life. And at some point you realize, you know, this is not a low point. This is a launching pad
okay.
for where I really want to go with my career. So.
Nice. You were a consultant for a few months, right?
Yes.
So you experienced somehow the life of an entrepreneur before going back to corporate. So how was that from the, I would say, from the experience, from what were you feeling? How did you experience that? And what made you go back to corporate?
Well, I mean, corporate is what I had, is what my CV was, right, for 10, 15 years at that point. And I had the experience. I had the contacts. I had the
mm-hmm.
the industry. Now, are you saying, could I have gone to music at that point? I don't think so. I didn't have a music career by that point. But,
yeah, well, keep going with consulting.
I could have kept going with consulting. At some point, you make a choice. You find something you like. And this was giving me a choice. And I ended up was consulting actually for Google, and they hired me as a consultant and then as a full-time employee. So that was,
okay.
that's how that happened. Right.
Okay.
And consulting's great. For those who have had the opportunity to do it, you sort of make your own rate. You choose your own hours. I mean, you're going to work your tail off just like you would in a regular job because you have to perform. They don't renew your contract if you don't do something, but at the same time you're more appreciated because you know that they've made a definitive decision to hire you because of your expertise or your
okay.
A void that they're trying to fill, as opposed to being an employee and being just a number and an employee and sort of being measured on the rest of the company, right? You are measured on more singularly on your performance and what you're
right.
trying to do, your specific, so to speak.
Right.
So it's good. And I liked that about it.
Okay, excellent. And now that you have, I mean, you were in telecommunication more or less all your career. And as you said, you started with something that was all through cable and now it's all cloud and AI and so
yeah.
on. So how does that feel to be part of something like that? And then the second question would be, how do you see the future?
I see the, you know, I feel like I'm doing the exact same thing I was doing 20 years ago. It's just called something else. And
okay.
it's just changing the game a little bit, right? It's still American football, right? You still have to quarterback it. You still have to come up with the plays and you still have to initiate the play and deal with the competition, right? So what I'm doing now is basically oversee business development for an organization that does managed services, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to point-to-point, long-range transport kind of data, I'm more of the edge-based SME at this time, right? We're
Okay.
looking at, you have all of these sort of new players in the market, ourselves included, Viasat. A lot of, let me just kind of speak for the satellite industry, right? You have these legacy satellite operators that have been putting these satellites out there for commercial, residential, and government for many, many moons, right? And until recently, I would say until the last 5 years, there wasn't really a sexy part about the satellite industry, right?
Okay.
You have these new companies come in, OneWeb, Starlink, and then what Amazon's putting out with Kuiper. These LEO satellite operators, as they say, most people not in the industry would never have thought of satellite before.
Yes.
This sort of explosion of these new players in marketing. And why is that so important? Well, it's because these big tech companies have now gotten into the internet space, right? They see that as a vehicle not only to bring internet to the unserved around the world, but as as kind of being a part of the ecosystem, right? You're starting to see things getting introduced like direct to phone from satellite. So now you're not necessarily competing with cellular providers on the ground. You're basically trying to make sure that it's all interoperable, whether you're getting your call through space or a wireless infrastructure on the ground, right? So they're part of the ecosystem. These tech companies, if you think of Tesla and Amazon and companies like that that are getting into the space, they have other parts of their business
Right.
that they want to engage with users, right? So it becomes interesting when they say, you know what? The most integral part of this business is making sure we connect with customers. And the best way to be the connection to the customer is to be the internet provider.
Yeah.
And so I look at it at that from that perspective is they're getting into this space for a very deliberate reason, to be the internet provider and then be the engagement partner. And then you overlap that with advertisement, ways to monetize it and so forth, right? So
I see.
that helps our business. We're not the same kind of satellite company as them, but because of all that noise in the space, our business has grown. Our
Yeah,
entire
okay.
satellite
I see.
industry has become prevalent again. And for that matter, what I do is I make sure that the network's on the ground. So not just a satellite connection, but how do we distribute that to inside buildings and put Wi-Fi networks and 5G
Yeah.
networks across a campus, things like that. So
Okay, nice.
that's it.
So I think that's a good proof, in fact, that competition is a very good thing, in fact.
I would say so.
Because many
I
people
would
are
say so. It
scared of
keeps you on your toes.
competition. Yeah, it keeps you on your toes, yeah. Zero competition market is a pretty boring one.
Yeah, there's a notion. I'm sure this notion is around the world, but there's two notions that I follow. One is fail fast. You've probably heard that before. If you're fail fast means if you're going to do an experiment and you are and you've gone through all of the testing and whatever hypotheses that you want to do, and it's fails, it means don't prolong it. Don't
Don't
keep
insist.
perpetuating the fail. Fail fast and shift, right? Shift direction or shift gears, whatever you want to do. Okay, there's that. Oh gosh, yeah, sorry, my train of thought. So fail fast, and then the other one is basically be a quick follow. Okay, so
Okay.
when you start to see a business that is starting to build, right? It's an emerging market. You're not sure if they're hitting a void, but you found a competitor that has a niche, right? So when you're a quick follow, you're not replicating the competitor's product. You're basically saying, okay, there is a market here. I want to be distinguished from my competitor, but I realize that it's untapped for whatever reason, right? And build it differently, build upon the successes of the competitor. But you're not trying to compete for the exact same market share. You're trying to compete the market, but address the problem a different way, right? So it's just basically a quick follow is what I like to call that. So fail fast, a quick follow. And those are two philosophies I try to follow in life.
D'accord. Yeah, that's quite interesting. So let me ask you another question here now, more back to you. Why are you doing what you are doing?
Well, it pays the bills, I would say.
That's a good reason.
It does pay the bills. I enjoy when I'm, let's see, how do I put this? I enjoy it when I'm a big fish in a little pond, but I also like being a small fish in a big pond, to
Okay.
use the analogy. So right now I'm a small fish in a big pond, but I'm in sort of a business within a business, and we're able to make some decisions and make some interesting bets on things that allow us to really make some big wins if we have to, right? So what I mean by that is, when you have an opportunity to be you, at some point in your career, you have to kind of draw upon your success and take some bets, right? You're not
Right.
just there getting a paycheck. You're not just there trying to build your career. You want to make a difference, right? There's you kind of have this epiphany in life, and you look at it and you go, okay, I'm expert at something or some things, and you want to bring that to the table, and you start to make some bets, and you start to build rapport, and you with management say, listen, I want to go this direction. I need you to trust me on this. I need budget for this, resources for that, whatever, right? And they want to see a quantifiable return. But at the same time, you say, you know what? I can't promise you that, but I can promise you that if I'm successful, it's going to be this, right? And at some point, the company, through your past performance, starts to believe in you, and you start to make those kinds of bets. So that's where I'm at in my
Right.
career, is I'm trying to make some really big bets, fiduciarily responsible bets, but at the same time, big bets where the company has an opportunity to really take a large market share in something. And that's what I bring my expertise to the table. And whether my expertise is as simple as, hey, I know how to run a sales team, or I know how to build a market or a product or a go-to-market strategy, it's that. But it can also be, hey, I kind of understand a specific niche of a market, and I can see where there's a void, and I feel like we have an opportunity with little R&D or little resources or a little time to market, whatever the factors are, to get to that and go seize that market. And it may not be a defensive mood. It may a defensive move where you're trying to get there because of competition or before competition. It may just be, hey, there's an untapped market that has great margin or great opportunity, and we just need to go after it, right? So we take a big bet in that regard.
Yeah.
So.
And when did you, at what age? Because I'm always interested in that, at the age at which, as you say, you have an epiphany, you want to do something else, you want to try something else, you want to use your expertise, your experience. So at what age did that happen for you?
Oh, I've been that way since I was 15 years old.
Oh,
But I'm just
okay.
saying the but no, you have the epiphany. It's not a single point in your life, right? So I'm in my 50s now. So
Okay.
when you at this age, I'm just thinking, you know, what's the next 10 years of my career look like, or less, before I throw in the towel. But all the way through my career, I have looked at my role. And where I can make a difference. And then I have an epiphany about what's working, what's not working, what
Okay.
is the market needing at the moment. And I've always gotten quite bored when you get into a very monotonous role. And it's just a measuring stick on CAGR or you know, KPIs, and it's
Yeah.
just, you know, it's just a constant growth. And I said, that's just not, that doesn't excite me, just to grow the business
Okay.
exponentially per year. I want to do something different and really make a bigger impact. Even if it's strategic and it takes you 2 to 3 years, I'm more interested in trying to build a following and build a business that's different than where it is today. Okay, so I get bored. I've done that my entire life. I've looked at every company. I'll say that when I was with Google, I can't go into some of the proprietary stuff, but when I was
No, of
there,
course.
some of the things that we talked about were, I'm starting to see fruits of that, right? So I was there early when they were doing Google Fiber, putting fiber into cities, right? And what they've publicly said at the time was, hey, we're just trying to get the market to catch up. The
Okay.
US at the time was actually slower on average per household or business on speeds than the rest of the world. And
Yeah.
they deliberately said, well, we're going to put some investments out there, not because we think we're going to take over the market, but because we need to get the market to react to it. Okay. So
Interesting.
the whole deal of spending hundreds of millions of dollars in building a fiber network was to get the cable guys and telcos to deliberately improve their speeds and their infrastructure so that they could improve the internet. Okay. And as Google likes to say, the faster the people they can get people onto Google assets, the more money they make, so to speak.
Right.
So it's about eyeballs and it's about having a presence and engagement with those customers. So that was kind of interesting. So that was an epiphany I had when I was there, and I just sort of built upon it there, and that's 13 years ago. And now we're starting to see. Well, everybody's pitching fiber to the home. Everybody's pitching, 10x the speeds they were 10 years ago, right? We expect that, but you wouldn't expect it as fast had they not been in the mix, in my opinion, right? So they deliberately have started to push that market. I think that was the goal.
Interesting. Interesting for it requires some nice strategical thinking there to get there.
It does. It does.
Do something to kick off the rest of the market. That's
Right. So the I got from I went I came from there to the company I'm at now, but through an acquisition. So I came to this small company. One of the other epiphanies while there at Google was this in-flight internet business that had just sort of become a thing. And this was 2013. You didn't have a lot of airlines with Wi-Fi on
Right.
them at the time. You had companies like Gogo out there, but they were using older technology, or I should say, they were using technology that was in place that had been in place for many years. And you didn't have what you have today, which is a high speed internet in every seat on the plane. And so that
Okay.
was an interesting model that I saw. Okay, I can take the business that I understood. On the ground through distributed enterprise, through kind of this roaming aspect with hotels and airports and small businesses and things that we had done in prior businesses. And I see this happening on planes, right? So one of the
Okay.
reasons we came here was, okay, this company that I was with at the time was looking at how do we make that business on the plane much more interesting, and how do we monetize it? How do we build it and scale it, right? It's not just bringing internet to the plane. It was not at the time in-flight entertainment. It was more live television, and it became, hey, there's a marketplace. You've got a sort of a candid audience in the air for a while. How do we address that? How do we get more users with more devices of any kind to connect with whomever they have a relationship with on the plane, as opposed to logging into a portal page, putting your username and password in, putting in a credit card, things like that. So that business was new back then. So when I came here through the acquisition, it was one of the things that we talked about was, hey, how do we build that business to be a much more formidable business for the airline partners, but also for the users, right? What experiences do we need, and how does that make a difference for the journey? And you take that now, and you sort of tie it into what's happening at airports, and how you're connecting to all your different relationships. So you have your Apple or your Android relationship in most cases, and then you have your loyalty programs. You have your airline partners. You have a lot of apps. You have all these things that are happening on your phone when you're walking around an airport. Those kind of identity management and relationships persist no matter where you're at.
Right.
Unless, why can't that go to the plane, and why can't that come back to the airport? Why can't that go to the hotel? So sort of this follow me journey kind of relationship thing was an early on discussion, and kind of starting to see it build its fruits now. So.
Interesting. Interesting. Thank you. Thank you. That's
Yeah,
super
of course.
interesting. So do you have some key takeaways or deep thoughts that that the listeners could live with and keep thinking about for the rest of the day?
Well, under what theme? So give me a theme
The
that
one that you want. What
you're.
inspires you? What inspires you and you would like others to be inspired by?
As I said earlier, I've always tried to look at any role that I'm in any company I'm with, any industry I sell for, and I try to find out how I and my team can make a difference. Okay, the company will measure me personally on my performance on sales and revenue and profit and all that. I know
Right.
that part, right? But I won't be remembered, and I won't take a lot of joy in doing my job unless I find something that really is impactful to the company and to the industry. So I really spend a lot of my time thinking about what's the next big thing.
Okay.
I spend 80% of my time doing my job, 20% thinking about what is the next big thing,
Nice.
and that 20% is what keeps me up. It's
Okay.
what gets me excited. It's what makes me go to work every day, so to speak. And it's what I drive for. And to the extent I have a company and resources and team members that believe in that
Okay.
and follow that philosophy, I'm okay with it. So that's what I do. That's the philosophy I live by. It's, you're in a role, you're in a job, you're in a career. Just don't forget that if you really don't want to be doing the same thing 5, 10 years from now, or you want to do something that you really enjoy, or you want to be remembered, you want to make an impact, just kind of split your time around in that way.
Interesting.
Take 20% of your day and think about what is the next big thing? How can I make a big difference in this company or in my life, right? Whether it's your career, it's your marriage, it's your friendships, your family, whatever, right? How can I make a difference? And spend 20% of your time thinking about that.
That's nice. That's lovely. Excellent. Thanks, Robert. So if people want to get in touch with you, where can they find you? What's the easiest way to get in touch with you?
So they can find me on LinkedIn for sure. They'll just look for Robert Matthew Brown on LinkedIn. You'll find me under Viasat, Viasat.
Okay.
And certainly if you want to, I'm sure we could post my email or something here on the podcast. If somebody wants to reach out to me with a question or something professionally, we'll put it at the end of the podcast here,
I will
and
add it
let
in
you.
the comments. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
In the description of the
Very
podcast.
Very
Okay.
good.
Robert,
Thank you for your
thank you
time.
so much. I really appreciate it. It was
Absolutely.
very, very interesting. And
Thank
I look
you.
forward to having you in the future again on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, sir.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.